Hey, what's up, Believe? This is Believe in White Sox, podcast number 8. Hello to the Barbies, because they are a significant listening block for us. I can assure you that the Ballantinis and Bernardis are probably not listening. So thank you, Barbies, for representing. We need you. You're the core of our listenership, and I appreciate you being out there. I'm Brett Ballantini, speaking to you from the epicenter of coronavirus, Florida, speaking to someone who I think is a little bit safer, but still in the Southeast is Tommy Barbie, my partner on Believe in White Sox. Welcome, Tommy. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I don't think we're that far behind you, so I can't, you know, be too glum about it. Yeah.
And I can't even really beat you on, like, the senator battle.
Yeah,
you know, I really thought I could exploit that, but yeah, I got to sort of look in my own house here and say, holy cats, we got quite a pair. Well, it's been a while since I think we've spoken with our Believe audience, Tommy. And here's the thing. White Sox are real good, or when they're just pretty okay, based on the division basically being conceded to them. I'm not even sure there's too much point, at least for now, famous last words, getting into that whole, like, hey, the Pythagorean projects them to be a 98-win team. What, it doesn't matter. I mean, at this point, they go 500. They're pretty much 90 wins. The division is awful and has given up, so that should only make things easier. So I don't think we're going to focus too much on the nail-biting of what are they doing? Are they going to be okay? What did Tony say? Who's injured? Because you feel fairly confident that this is, without anything ever really being in the bag, it's as cruise control as you can possibly be for the last 2 months.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last percentage I saw was like 98.8% chance of making the playoffs. So, I mean, it's as close to a slam dunk as it can get for the first week of August.
Isn't that nice? I mean, it is. I don't care if the other four teams took three steps back in the White Sox and like, okay, I guess we took a step forward or two.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I mean, the division in 1983, if I recall, Kansas City was, and I remember at the time, I don't know if it still is, it was a record division win. And I believe Kansas City was in second place below 500. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's precedent. I don't care. I just love the fact that they ran away with it. I mean, granted, exactly. It set you up for a sucker punch right to the jaw when they got bullied out of the playoffs by Baltimore, but hey, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves for this. But what I want to do, Tommy, is rather than talk about, hey, geez, what are they, you know, we're talking right now, audience, not only from the lovely Southeast of the United States of America, but we're talking as the White Sox are attempting to romp their way through a sweep against the Chicago Cubs. We're going to get to the Chicago Cubs and Chicago White Sox games maybe a little bit later on, but let's not do any ninny hand wringing over like, whoa, what's happening with the White Sox? Let's talk. Yeah, Tommy, I want to know, the White Sox were active at the trade deadline, which again is another thing that freaks me out because like, what
surprise, right?
Is going on? Just to be in position. And then not only to be in position, but then actually to do the things we thought they were in position for.
Absolutely.
Freaking me out. I don't think I've gotten over it yet, but three main trades, obviously getting Cesar Hernandez from the Cleveland Ball Club, and then two trades with the Cubs, grabbing Craig Kimbrel and Ryan Tepera over. I would like to know, in your estimation, with just a touch of Monday morning quarterbacking allowed, given the fact that the deadline was about a week ago, which one do you see as being the most significant?
Oh, I think in the regular season, Cesar Hernandez is the biggest acquisition they could make. The playoffs, it's going to be Kimbrel. I think that, and you know, we mentioned this on the Southside Sox podcast. I really thought the Sox needed another veteran bat to help fill out the middle infield. You know, so it isn't the Lurie and Danny Mendick show for, you know, there was no way that was sustainable. And, you know, we're already seeing some of the benefits there where Garcia's been pretty much the core bench utility guy, which I think is a fitting role for him. But it, once we get into the playoffs, then that's when you really start talking about shortening the game. And I think that Kimbrel acquisition will really become critical once the playoffs hit.
Yeah, you broke it down well. And of course, this is why I asked somebody like Tommy Barbie to be my partner here, because he comes up with good points and I just try to talk as fast as I possibly can. But you broke it down interestingly, because I thought I was going to throw a curveball and say Cesar Hernandez. But I think you broke it down well, because I think, yeah, regular season, there was more of a need, mm-hmm. Immediate need, just a what the hell need, because you're right, running out Leury and particularly Mendick was subpar, and the White Sox could have gotten away with it, but it's nice that they upgraded and it seems like it's a significant upgrade. But you're right, come playoffs, yeah, things do change, and the idea of asking your starters, by the way, by and large, really great starters, to be like, yeah, fine, if you're gassed in the fifth, yeah, we could take that, this, you know, this start, that's a really nice situation to be in. And yeah, man, I'm not sure if you want to give Tony more decisions, but I mean, I would think for a manager, in theory, that's just great to be able to say, all right, I don't have to push you as I've been doing all year.
Exactly.
To 110 plus pitches, because we've really shortened the game. And that's the way baseball sort of works now, max effort and shorten the game the way you can. And who would have thunk that the White Sox had been able to do that? As much as we thought the bullpen was going to be awesome this year, and then it sort of like confused us. I mean, this is better than what we would have hoped in spring training. And it's just sort of shocking that, you know, that Rick Hahn's been able to put this together with probably minimal body blows.
Absolutely. I mean, I was shocked at how little the Sox had to give up for each one of the trades that they made. And, you know, I know that there are those that think that Nick Madrigal is going to be the next Tony Gwynn and all of that, and if he is, more power to him. But I think that they got the maximum value out of what they were going to get from a Nick Madrigal, and you cannot pass up on making that kind of move. And, you know, to your point about not only helping the starters, I think it also helps guys like Kopech and guys like Crochet and even Rodon to a certain extent, that are probably looking at some sort of innings cap. This helps them so that they don't have to rely on Kopech on for 2 and 3 innings consistently in relief or anything like that. So that does give Tony a scary amount of options. So, you know, let's see how that goes.
And it might've been the plan already. Mm-hmm. Although, boy, it seems like Kopech is getting, you know, he's pretty tapped for whatever limit. If there was a limit, he's got to be, he will approach it.
Yeah.
But I mean, the stronger bullpen maybe does restore some of that flexibility to give Kopech a start, most likely in the playoffs at this point, without it being that, like, you know, back to the wall, all men, you know, Lucas Giolito's coming out from that, you know, the Mark Burley save situation.
Exactly.
Might give them a little more flexibility, because if you feel like Kopech, you can't possibly burn him for a start and you got to run a Keuchel out there, or you can't go for a 6-man just sort of chilling everybody out in September. You know, if that flexibility, then, you know, you're going to force all these guys, and some of them are a little bit up there in years, a couple of the guys. So, you know, that another option again for Tony. Sort of scary. What do you see, Tommy, as being the one thing you most want to see from this team between now and the playoffs? One thing that you'd like to see that would give you a little bit more heart in this team?
I feel like it's a cop-out answer, but health. I mean, you know,
not just getting guys back, but keeping anybody else from dying.
But keeping everyone else healthy. And you know, when Yasmani comes back, which seems really soon, for some weird, I have no idea
what they did
to that man's knee to make it come back so quickly. But, you know, he's sprinting down base paths right now. If he comes back, it's just like, I want these guys to come back early enough where it's late August and we're looking at a completely healthy team that is putting it together. Because, you know, it's like with Aloy, he came back, got re-injured a little bit, had to sit down, had to come back in, and took a little time getting his timing back. It's not going to be instant. So if the guys come back in enough time where they have the opportunity to kind of get reacclimated, get situated back into the fold, I think that that is probably the best medicine for the White Sox as a team.
Yeah, you want to get him running. First of all, Yasmani Grandal is not going to, he is not going to steal a single dollar of his $18 million a year. He's just not going to do it. He can't live with himself. He'll jump off a cliff rather than like think he's getting money for doing like not quite enough. I mean, talk about like, I mean, hopefully he's a slightly better temperament, but talk about like a Carlton Fisk, like reincarnated. I mean, you can imagine Sebi like doing like 10 miles on the bike after he just caught, you know, 11 innings. God bless him, you know, God bless. I hope he doesn't kill himself before the contract is up, but geez.
I have no idea how he's doing it. And, you know, there's nobody seems to question that he's going to be catching as soon as he's back too. So I don't get it, but more power to him.
All right, as we're talking, I'm coming up with new things to ask. So let me give you a speed round type of question here. And I don't think the rosters are going to break down this way, certainly for the playoffs. I know we'll get to expand. I want to say it's like just by a few guys in September in this season. But if the choice was, I guess let's just go in order. I'm going to throw out three names. I want you to give me probably the guy that's most likely to not be on the playoff roster. We'll go in reverse. And it's Gavin Sheets. It's Sebi Zavala, and it's Zach Collins. And I guess this really comes down to whether or not your backup catcher is going to be Sebi or Zach for the playoffs.
My personal choice would be Collins. I think the real choice will be Sheets. And I think it's because there are enough people in the position to make such decisions that believe that Zach Collins is a valuable left-handed bat off the bench that that will win out over Sheets.
So Sebi is on the club in your scenario, or he's long gone? Okay, so he is sort of, in your mind, the backup catcher and the guy who's sort of like can help out. Interesting. Okay, yeah, I would agree with what Sebi has shown us. This is more like the guy we saw maybe 2018 thinking, okay, seems like his defense has taken a step forward and he's got a little bit of pop. He's minimally acceptable. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, he had the 2019 and really this season pretty lousy with the bat. And, you know, nobody's more surprised than me that he comes to the White Sox and, you know, hasn't gone crazy with the bat, but
hasn't been awful either. Bad. Yeah. <You know.
laughs> Sorry, Sebi, that's sort of a low blow, but I mean, you know, I mean, you gotta do more than just that, but yeah, it does seem at least as, I mean, aside from, I guess, the walk, you know, walks versus strikeouts and no one can deny that Collins has got some discipline that is value added, but the fact that his catching shortcomings are just made even more highlighted even more greatly by Sebi coming up and being decent, good, competent. That doesn't show well for Collins.
Well, and I haven't heard anybody complain about pitching to Collins, but I don't see him being the guy that guys would want to pitch to in a very close playoff game where all of the punching behind home plate at the ball can come back to bite you. Like, that's really not a situation that most of those guys are going to want to be in.
And, you know, Dallas Keuchel accepted. Let's hope everybody's professional enough not to say they hate pitching to him. But I think it's a lot said that they're not saying they like pitching to him because it's basically the same message.
That's true.
And, you know, if it's your teammate, hopefully you're not going to throw. Dallas, he's a crazy
Dallas
man.
Is his own man.
That beard gets itchy. So it's like, you know, man, don't get on the wrong side of Dallas Keuchel.
He's his own guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully he can get himself straightened down. Stop looking around the field. That'd be a work last year for the team, but he was also under 2 ERA last year. So you're going to get that pass.
You can get away with year. It. Yeah.
Just stay in the rotation, Dallas. Okay. Last question for the 2021 White Sox team before maybe we transition to some more fun stuff and everybody can either pause or start listening. I don't know. It really depends on what type of the thousands, of the tens of thousands of you out there, the type of Believe in White Sox fan you are. The quirky stuff, or you're just here for the hardcore 2021 White Sox stuff. But another sort of fantasy scenario here, Tommy. And I would like to know that at the likely price, the likely cost to bring either of these guys back, and take into account the White Sox and their tendencies, Who is the pitcher that the White Sox would find more desirable to bring back to the team next year? Is it Carlos Rodon? Is it Ronaldo Lopez?
Rodon.
So even I
think they get it done because
really
for it, as cheap as they tend to be, Reinsdorf also recognizes loyalty. And I think that he would trust Han to structure a contract in a way where it is advantageous for both sides, whether that means a ton of club options or options based on innings pitched. I think that as great of a season as Rodon has had, unless there's a dark horse team that I'm not thinking of, I don't think he has, in terms of overall stock, has elevated himself to a degree where there's going to be a team with just gobs of money that says, I'm going to overspend on a contract for you. Like, you know, thinking about like Arrieta post Cubs when he had those miraculous seasons there. I don't see it as being that kind of lightning in a bottle situation. But that being said, I've been surprised at free agent spending before, so there could be a team out there that would do that.
I like your confidence in the collusion market, Tommy. I'm not so confident because to me, it seems like, and I think this came up on the Southside Sox pages at some point earlier in the season when discussing, wrap up Rodon, let's keep him in the fold. And to me, the name that popped out, and I know it's certainly not a direct comp, but it seems in the ballpark of a Nathan Eovaldi.
Okay,
and I believe he approached, if not broke, nine figures with the White Sox. Yep. Have never paid. Got 4, maybe 5 years from Boston. Now, granted, he got re-signed by his own team in Boston. At that time, was still spending like the money would never run out. And news to everybody: none of the 30 teams' money is ever going to run out. So let's just establish that, including the White Sox.
Right.
But so is your answer the same? If there's an offer on the table, and I know you're saying, well, there's no dark horse team out there. But let's say the Chicago Cubs say, oh, you know what? We don't like the term rebuild. I like how that's going around these days. We don't like the term rebuild, even though we just ripped our team apart. But no, let's say they really are going to try to rebuild quick, and they're going to try to do it, you know, with a combination of maybe a couple trades, some farms. You know, it's possible. I pray
it doesn't happen. I don't buy that for a second, but I'll play along.
Okay, yes. Let's play along. Or maybe there's another team that's a little closer that didn't just rip its roster to shreds.
Yeah.
And is maybe a little bit closer, maybe where the White Sox were in the Machado dalliance. And then the offer is, we are willing to go with whatever little restrictions or, you know, safeties for us because his shoulder could blow up.
Right.
5 years and $100 million. Now, are the White Sox matching that? Do the White Sox see that as smart money? Because really, Tommy, if you're going to just look at value, and granted, he is giving them more value than he's being paid this year to a significant degree. If everything projects the right way, he's probably giving them maybe up to $15 million in surplus value. So in some ways, you can take that savings issue and say, all right, we're going to just you got a free year. Right. But I mean, you're looking at maybe $4 million per win above replacement. So you're looking at, for that contract, a guy who's going to give you 20-25 WAR over the 5 seasons, you know, if you want to frame it as, you know, what a fair value is Rodon, do they think he's going to be able to do that? And you're right to say, is any team going to think that? But, you know, I guess devil's advocate, if this guy continues and that so-called Steve Stone dead arm, Steve Stone doing a good job of sort of knock his own team down and other teams all the time. He's just throwing fists everywhere.
Yep.
Say he recovers and say I don't think it's a stretch to say he finishes in the top five in Cy Young, maybe even top three, that maybe he could even win that award.
Absolutely.
Let's project it that he's really riding high, which is why I think the White Sox jumped at Lance Lynn saying, okay, this is not going to end well for us.
Let's do this now. Yeah.
Cause I don't like where this is going.
Yeah.
Legit offer of, you know, say, maybe close to $20 million guaranteed, you know, per year, up to 5 years. Is that something the White Sox are going to find a way to match, even if they got to, you know, tweak it in a way to make it a little bit more of a Paul Konerko hometown discount by, you know, 10%.
Yeah, they wouldn't match it.
Okay.
I think in a situation like that, what I could see them doing is potentially front loading the deal more to make it you know, hospitable for their tastes, where it's, you know, maybe more money up front, but a shorter contract with some sort of sweetener in it to try to make them stick around. But I don't see them matching dollar for dollar if that type of offer comes up.
What do you think the max they would pay him, given that it would be a fair amount of, I mean, what's a fair amount of years coming off of a year? It seems like he's going to do is, do they have to go 4 years?
I would think 4 years. Yeah.
So over 4 years, what do you think they would give him? Would it be a Grandal, a near Grandal contract?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. See, they're not going to do that. And I'm not sure, you know, here's one time. I don't know that I would necessarily object. I love him.
I
love what he's done. But it is such a risk to give him
absolutely
that much money. And that is no diss on him. And I hope the guy, you know, gets in a Hall of Fame. It's just,
yeah,
you know, it's the best time for him. You know, he's really, you know, he, you know, I guess it wasn't even a prove me deal because there was apparently not a ton of people knocking down,
no,
you know, his door. But yeah, just that would be one I would not object. I mean, if they could do something with him where it's like even closer to Lynn or even just a couple of years, if for some reason, I don't think he's going to do, especially with Scott Boras. But I mean, you know, like 2 years, you know, 50 with the incentives, 2 years, 40, if you can get away with that. Okay. Maybe I could see, all right, let's push that eventual injury down the road a little bit.
Right.
Let's just keep racking up that war because frankly, they're getting a free year out of them this year.
They are.
Really. So, absolutely. I mean, they could say, yeah, all right, we're going to pay you this much because you've already given us a lot of wins that we didn't pay for this year.
But I think he's more interested in the years than anything. And I think that seems to be more often than not the limitation that sets the White Sox apart from other potential suitors. So I could see a team coming along and saying, okay, we're going to give you this 5-year contract. And the Sox is like, maybe 4 at like 90 million or, you know, 85 with a ton of incentives. But I don't think that they can match it. And I don't think that they should if it's at that point. And that's really, I agree, where it's like, that's too much of a gamble. But I think if you go in with that type of an offer, if he takes it, great. If he doesn't, like, there's really no harm there.
Yeah.
on either side.
Yeah, and being on the hook for Keuchel and having Kopech, I mean, you got to do something with Kopech.
You have to be
a reliever next year. Yeah. So, you know, he's your five there. And granted, I want them. I mean, there's no reason why there's no reason why the window of opportunity has to exist. There shouldn't be a window at all. It should just
there's
be a
no
big
window.
Gaping
it should
hole
just
in
be,
the wall.
Yes.
But so I would love, you know, hey, yeah, we've paid for 6 guys to fill 5 spots. And yeah, somebody's always banged up or bummed out or, you know, has a false positive for coronavirus, whatever the hell, you know, whatever's going to sit them down for a minute.
But also, I mean, especially talking about Keuchel, like he has... I don't think that act is going to work for much longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
2020
I mean,
was a good year for him, but yeah, 2021
one of these games where he starts complaining about defensive alignments, it's going to be like, all right, the defense is playing in the bleachers. Is that deep enough? Like, can they catch all the home runs that you're giving up now?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that is going to work out very well. Like I nobody's responded to any of it, which is good, but
yeah,
I don't see that working if he keeps that up.
Yeah, I mean, I of anyone, as a person who holds wiffle ball near and dear to his heart, I love seeing a guy basically throwing wiffle balls just mystifying the all of baseball. And it was a wonderful 2 months that we had last year. And I'm afraid that luck maybe has run out, or he's going to have to find another gear for craftiness. I mean, let's not forget he had this weird, like, fake ass spring training where he didn't pitch at all. He was getting like engaged or something. He was like completely absent, you know, which is cool. He's a veteran. And I'm sure it was like, okay, you know, don't
go do your
thing. We don't even need to ramp you up. But I mean,
yeah,
he still didn't, then, you know, he didn't have half a spring training. He had like maybe a quarter of a spring training. I don't know if that can help. I mean, just because he pulled it off the year he signed late, I think with Atlanta, before he signed with the White Sox, and was like, oh yeah, no, bro, this is easy. Well, maybe he's found out it's not so easy because he did something similar enough, and that hasn't been so great. And isn't it wonderful, Tom, to be able to talk about Dallas Keuchel like he's some sort of like big toothache when he's like, yeah, you know, we would have killed for that guy like a couple of years ago as the ace. So
yeah.
Not a bad place to be. Okay, let's jump back to the Cubs because, you know, who cares? But I'm just curious to know, we've had, what was it, 25, how many years? Like 25 years of interleague play? I don't know how long it's been, 25 years or so. A lot of highlights. The Cubs are real fond. The Cubs writers are fond of pointing out how, man, it's really close, you know, ignoring the fact that traditionally the White Sox should just kick the crap out of the Cubs in anything that's meaningful, including the City Series was played in the postseason, which was played for World Series type money. The White Sox always came in as underdogs and always embarrassed the Cubs. I do not let them get away with talking about this interleague being close, because technically that's true. They're within like what, 5 wins or something. But
sure.
Come on.
Yeah.
Traditionally, we know who the class of this city is. Anyway, I'm curious to know what perhaps jumps out at you, because there have been many highlights and some lowlights that jumps out as interleague highlights over the years, Tommy.
It's not so much highlights, but I just loved watching Carlos Lee make Cubs fans cry. Like, there was no player that did better against the Cubs than Carlos Lee. And it was just, it was guaranteed every time. If there was an opportunity to do damage, like he would just always come through.
I want to say somehow this has come up before talking to you, Tommy. I don't know. Maybe it hasn't. But the walk-off Grand Slam game I was at, and that started out as the David Wells, my back hurts.
Yes.
I think I finished my fourth career start, and now I'm going to just never play for the Sox again.
I'm just going to stop now.
Which was sort of a bummer to start out. Mm-hmm. Sort of a bummer to start the game that way. But yes, that was that jumps out at me. But then of course I was also at the AJ punch game, but then the game in Wrigley, which I've not ever gone to, not out of principle necessarily, although I don't really have a desire to step in there, particularly for an interleague game. But I want to say it couldn't have been much longer. They usually schedule these within a month or so. Where AJ hit the home run to, I don't know, as a visiting team, but eventually win the game. And that wasn't long after the punch. He probably still had a little bit of a bruise there. So, AJ sort of gets a little honorable mention to me in terms of highlights and killer and all that stuff.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And I wasn't there for the punch game, but I do remember turning on the TV right as AJ slammed his hand on home. And I was like,
that's some timing
going on. And and I just saw just like pop up. I'm like, oh my god, what's about to happen? Mm-hmm. And I, there's nothing more that I remember other than Brian Anderson, who you know, at that time was so maligned by Ozzie and the rest of the club, just coming in and looking like he was literally fighting for his job by just trying to fight anybody that he could in a Cubs jersey.
And Scotty Pazza, like the slightest Pazza guy on the field, is like immediate tackle. Instinct took over there. I mean, I want to say, well, he's from Texas, so he had to play football, but I'm guessing it was like, you know, flanker. Maybe kick returner. Exactly. I'm guessing he wasn't like middle linebacker. I don't know. Sorry, Scotty Pazza, if that's the case. I've said before that I think that's the only time in my life I've lost my voice in the course of like a half inning, because that when I went from 0 to 8,000 very quickly.
Because
it was also mesmerizing. And I would say my Cubs highlight for the interleague series would be, I think this was a game I was actually covering on the beat when I want to say Zambrano got into it in the dugout with maybe Barrett or some. There was some like fracas, or maybe it was Derek Lee. It was probably some crazy thing going on in the dugout because he was having a terrible start or whatever. Chances are, but you know, that's another one when they just would sort of like lose it. It's always nice to see the other team completely lose their composure and in Ivy Bumbler's style. But man, that is so much attention paid to the Cubs, really too much attention, although it's a great time to pay attention to the Cubs because they're awful. They have readily conceded the town to the White Sox. And we're going to see how the whole attendance debate plays out here in years to come. We'll see. I see them very quickly shifting to, it's a Bears town.
Oh, yeah.
I see that being the very quick next move. It's Bears town.
Well, I also think this is going to be a very long, quote, rebuild for the Cubs organization, too. And they didn't get a whole heck of a lot in return for the guys that they traded. And I don't see them ever finding enough money to feel comfortable bringing in high priced free agents. So unless they have to, I don't see them spending.
You don't see a correlation, Tommy, between general average talent level and the unvaccinated masses. You don't see there being a correlation. Man, that's the team I want. And they're just hold out. Like say Rodon, he didn't want to be vaccinated. So he's like, they can pay me only $50 million. I just want to be with those guys.
I just want to be there. Yeah.
You know, we get sick together. We're going to Cub together sick. All right. Good Cubs talk. Thanks, Tommy. Thanks for humoring me there. And let's hope that in the course of this, as they are playing, that something crazy and terrible hasn't happened, but it does seem like they're probably going to just try to speed through this final game. Sorry, ESPN, but you probably deserve it for the way you dick over the Sox on a routine basis to get up. Flat turkey of a game.
Yep.
Here is your finale, but whatever. All right, let's move to the music portion of the podcast, Tommy, if you are prepared.
Yes.
I am curious to know. I don't like to try to do too much negative stuff. Overrated was fun, so why not? Let's plug back into it. I need to know the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Tommy, given the fact that it's sort of goofy to begin with. We can establish it that. It's a silly yes. thing. But given that it is a silly thing, it is an institution. There are a list of inductees, and it's been going for far longer than I actually thought. Time has flown by, and they have continued to really bring a lot of people into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. My list really skews recent years, but I'm curious to know. I wrote down several names here, but maybe we can just trade back and forth. Who would you first kick out of the esteemed, hallowed Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I'm glad you mentioned off the bat that it's goofy because, like, whenever I think about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'm just like, somebody made a really wrong turn somewhere, and they need to just either blow it up and start from scratch or reestablish what this is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Because for one, it's definitely not rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And two, they have it doesn't make any sense how some of these bands even get inducted, where it's like, they just make up rules. It feels like as they go along, where it's like, oh yeah, this band is still touring, but the last time they released an album was then, and they haven't done anything since, so they're technically allowed to get in, even though this other band that meets the same criteria can't.
Yeah.
It's just nothing about it makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, clearly it's I wouldn't say popularity contest, I'm sure it's some sort of payola contest, but yeah. All right. Well, goofy rules aside and preposterousness of the institution. I mean, who doesn't want to visit Cleveland to go see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Because, you know, that's where it all started, Tommy. Cleveland.
That's where the Guardians hang out.
So, yes, the Rock and Roll Baseball Club has a lot of members. And I'm curious as to who you might boot out. I know you're a lover, not a fighter, and you don't even want to answer this question. And you know,
it was more like, I don't know. Every time I thought of somebody that I would boot out, I was just like, okay, but at the same time, is this where I need to draw the, like, is this where we draw the line?
Yeah, there's no war that I'm aware of. So that makes it sort of tough.
Who did you have?
I just went down the list of inductees. So this is, I think,
did you go order, like, class by class?
I think this is in order of going far back. And I six stood out to me. So I'm going to just name my six. My first is Ricky Nelson. Seems like a very odd choice. Now, granted, that's far before my time. So I'm sure the cultural impact was significant. I know he was an actor. I know he died tragically. I suppose that probably helps.
That's
despite the circumstances, which aren't the most favorable, but just seems to be, although there are a number of sort of empty calorie selections, and that even goes for maybe the past, not just more recently, because it seems to be stepping more that direction, that seemed to be just a little bit more one hitty and empty, but rushing a lot closer to today. I have to cite Bob Seger. Guns N' Roses is just personally offensive to me to be in its Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Bon Jovi. I mean, it's hard to say this stuff with a straight face.
I had a feeling that would be one of your choices.
and I guess the equivalent from across the pond, Def Leppard.
Def Leppard, yeah.
And I will have to say probably something that would cause some ire among the tens of thousands of listeners if they still were listening. They may have just shut it off or paused once we stopped talking about White Sox, Tommy. And that's Stevie Nicks as a solo artist. I
really
do not understand that. I do not understand that as a solo. Well,
I don't understand the whole let's select people individually after they've already been inducted.
Like six different times. Right. Like, you know, David Byrne can be in for a filmmaker and a solo artist, and he was in a band, and then maybe for his art school work. And it's like, hold on a second. So, yes, aside from that, first of all, the main contribution or the participation she had most significantly in music, that's been inducted and probably legitimately so. As a solo artist, I'm not going to pick on the instrument because there are Tom Waits and Bob Dylan.
Yes.
I mean, they're not. So, I mean, I'm not going to play that game, still fair to note. And I'm not just really sure that the body of, I mean, granted, I will admit this is a somewhat of a, at least for some of these, maybe not completely researched lists, but from what I'm aware of, I am not dazzled enough to say, this person should be in ahead of probably a good 100 other acts.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that would mean that, you know, again, first of all, it's there's no diss here. You still have your medallion. You still got your gold medal for being in years earlier in your band. So it's okay. You know, that's where it ended. I'm pretty sure I had more, but that is where it ended. So is Stevie Nicks the one that most personally offends you, or is there someone who stands out like, wow, I'm very mean?
No, I mean, all of them make sense. And it's Stevie Nicks only surprises me just because I feel that her influence is such that it didn't surprise me to see her inducted. And this is why I don't like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is that it's like Ringo Starr was one of mine, because like, I just don't understand how you can say, because it's musical excellence. And it's like Ringo Starr was known for a lot of things. Musical excellence wasn't necessarily in the traditional sense one of the things that he was known for, but highly influential for very obvious reasons. But again, the Beatles are already in. Do you need to then like?
See, I had somehow missed in my
individually, everybody gets their own individual recognition.
Yeah, my very detailed research into this, I had somehow skipped over the fact that Ringo Starr and the All Star Band for his almost sole top 40 hit Photograph somehow is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Okay, so I will note Ringo Starr. Sorry, Ringo, you are a swell fellow. And Tommy might even be selling you short musically. However, as a band leader, I mean, that's like a guy who's sort of built for the festival, whatever you call it, the retread festival circuit. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's great that, you know, Joe Walsh joins up with them and plays some songs, or guys who are even less notoriety than that, you know, they get together, play some songs for Rob, everybody loves it. You know, folks remember when they, you know, still had hair and stuff, and it's just a wonderful time. But I'm not really sure that's, no matter how charming and swell a guy he is. All right. I just somehow passed right over that. So you've added a seventh to my list. Believe me, there are are many, many more. And you're right. I am probably, again, I do not understand necessarily the Stevie Nicks influence, although of course being a strong female voice at a time where maybe weren't always strong female voices, especially in the more male dominated areas and not just say like folk music or something. I can certainly see that. I'm sure I'm underestimating that, not being of that gender or of that age where it would have wowed me in the same way it would have. But yeah, still, I still feel perhaps the resume comes up a little short because clearly there's a defined requirements for this. So clearly.
And that's what I don't understand because, you know, going through the inductees, I'm always like, all right, you can make an argument for that, but it's not what first comes to my mind, you know? And I think it's especially weird now that it's expanded into hip hop, mm-hmm. which, yes, there are certain hip hop artists that have direct rock influences in their music or that same rebellious attitude that they bring to music, but that doesn't by default, like everybody should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like it's not all the same. And the fact that they just kind of treat it the same makes it feel just really weird and awkward to me.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there are years that no one, which is silly to me, but that no one's elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame like this year.
Yeah.
And the idea that they'll just never, it's like, I think it's pretty much written in. It's sort of impossible to do, I think. So, you know, that alone sort of makes it silly because then somehow you have to continue to broaden this and water this down.
And make it, yeah.
And arguing for a blues artist or even a jazz artist, of which I don't think there are many, blues, yes, jazz, no, being roots to rock and roll is a lot stronger argument to make than to say like hip hop has a connection. Again, I could see the validity, especially for a band or an artist who really has incorporated a lot of those elements. But, you know, I mean, that's like, those are like parallel things. I mean, it's like saying, you know, and I guess technically they're also trying to sort of drag in some more like electronic artists. And I know there's some roots there too, but I mean, that seems to be a lot, taking a bigger slice of the pie from rock and roll today than it ever did in the past. So, yeah, it does seem like a splintering into many different wings. Hey, let me tell you, Tommy, let me tell you my Bob Seger story, because I'm never going to get a chance to talk about Bob Seger again. That's sort of a dumb one, but when I was in college, John Mellencamp put out a new album, and at the time he was a pretty big deal, and you know, I like him a lot, still do. Mm-hmm. But he had a song, he had an album coming out, and I wasn't a big radio listener and all that. And so my roommate comes home and says, have you heard this new song by John Cougar, whatever, called Bob Seger? And he's singing about like, he doesn't want to be Bob Seger. He doesn't want to sing any Bob songs. I'm like, wow, that seems like sort of nasty. Why? You know, that doesn't really seem to be something that's going on here. If anything, it seems like those guys would be like bros or whatever. And I think I like called my friend who also like, you know, John, and I was like, man, going on with this thing. And of course that song turns out to be, which is an awful song, but I mean it also wasn't a Bob Seger diss track. It was called Pop Singer, and my roommate just simply had not understood that the he context. Really was not going after Bob Seger. That's about as close to liking Bob Seger I've really got, though. And again, I'm probably unfairly dissing Bob Seger. I'm sure he's like a good like Motown, like or Detroit rock and roller, I guess, but
I think you're giving him the fair amount of credit.
Okay. That he might at least be in the kids' table at the next. All right. Well, if you are not revoking anybody's invitation in, are there urgent cases for this stupid institution that I've forced you to talk about that you would think need to be attended to more quickly than others? Because when I look at the list of who is, you know, technically the whole planet is eligible, but based especially on the criteria, but man, there is like a case to be made for dozens of people. And that doesn't even take getting into, say, older black artists and certainly jazz, which really seems underrepresented in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But is there someone or some group that really seems strange that they are not in this Hall of Fame.
It's just as a awards ceremony and induction, I just think the whole thing needs to be overhauled. And it's like, it's the same way that I even struggle with like how the Grammys are represented, where it's like, you know, they have all these really small niche categories where it's like, if you are a Black musician by default, you fall under the contemporary R&B umbrella because it used to be the urban, you know, category, and that's just where everything fell because of what you look like, and it had nothing to do with the music you made.
Right.
And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just feels the same weird pastiche of just like, let's just kind of grab all these different things and throw it together, and everybody should be a part of these same inductions. And I just think it's weird because now you have like, it feels so performative to have like Notorious B.I.G. and Radiohead, who are still making music, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it's like, yeah, both are legendary in their own right, but if you're not going to actually be appreciative of like their contemporaries or all that is encompassed in New York hip hop or Britpop with Radiohead, therefore Oasis, and you know, all those other bands like Blur that came along before Radiohead to kind of make up what that represents, it just seems disingenuous to just be like, all right, we're just gonna kind of grab these random bands and call it good.
Yeah, so you're approaching this question more, I would like to do the most rock and roll thing and just burn it to the ground.
I want anarchy in my rock and roll Hall of Fame.
You want more punk representation in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which entails just destroying it, which I can't say is necessarily a wrong impulse at all. they're confused. They're definitely confused. I mean, it hurt my soul to see that what I suspected in Bon Jovi and Def Leppard was confirmed, and bands like that were actually in. And I'm sure.
But why? Like, I mean, it's just like, what bands do you know of that would go out and say, "Oh yeah, Def Leppard, man, that influenced my musical career."
You can't make an argument for style. You can't make an argument for, you know, there's artists who are in there already who should be in there, who maybe didn't necessarily make the biggest mark, but maybe because of some of their performance art, let's say, or because maybe it wasn't particularly good, but because they sort of blazed a trail. You can say, well, all right, this was one of the first, and okay, it's hard to, you know, maybe hard to listen to, but you could obviously make an argument for, I don't know that they are, good Lord, the Sex Pistols in the Hall of Fame, I don't know if they are, but I mean, I
thought so.
That's not necessarily, I don't think there's musical merit there in the least, but I mean, certainly you could say, well, all right, that they went headstrong into something.
Yeah, I was going to go even further and say like Captain Beefheart, who I'm sure isn't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but like to your point, you know, from an influence standpoint, would make a lot more sense than some of the other bands.
He is not, and funny, when I was looking at some of the listings, I thought I absolutely should put him on my list. He did not even make my list, but yes, that stood out as glaring in that category of absolute influence, and you know, contemporaries to whatever degree too, but. Even some longevity, you know, I don't know. He did sort of hang it up, but then he could get in as a painter.
There you go. Yeah.
Just that'll push him over. That's a little
just
extra.
Just do that.
It's that late career war that gets him in because he's got some paintings, you know.
Painting excellence. There you go.
So you don't wake up around Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announcement time and say, God, I hope this band finally gets in, or I'm going to really have to burn that place down if I ever go to check your notes.
I just pay attention to more random things, especially now that it's like the early 90s time for like, so I'm like, all right, any year now Dave Matthews Band and Phish are going to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and neither of those bands are bands that I would consider rock and roll, but hey, they meet the criteria. So
yeah, they should have just a sales wing or like a bro wing. Cause then, you know, like a Def Leppard and Bon Jovi should be in that wing.
That's
maybe,
true.
Maybe Guns N' Roses. I don't know. They had like one record, but I guess they could be in that wing. I don't know. I mean, that makes some sense, I suppose. Bob Seger could be in the, it's a big wing. Oh, this is another one. This is a whole nother topic. Bob Seger could be in the commercial music wing. But then again, just about all the acts have music in commercials.
Kind of a requirement.
And those who still have held out, I hold dear, but there aren't that many anymore.
There aren't that many anymore. No.
All right. So I guess the conclusion is we will just burn it down.
Burn it all down. Exactly.
Fair enough. So me quibbling like about Cubs. Guns N' Roses being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is immaterial because it just all should be destroyed. And
exactly.
They can still keep their medals. Mm-hmm. Axl Rose can still keep his medallion. And that guy, Elliot.
He can still be a happy camper.
And John Biangiovi can keep his medal as well. And
exactly.
And keep making records and keep.
They can keep doing their thing. Okay. Go on tour.
And so we won't replace it. We won't relocate it. We won't replace it. It just goes away.
Yeah.
And it's more just like it's more word of mouth. The Hall of Fame becomes word of mouth.
Exactly.
So like for you,
like a good indie rock band.
There you go. So like you know your first one you and Trine is like Velvet Underground. It's like okay, they weren't the first, but you'd be like one of the first for you because it's like, well, okay, there's some massive influence. So
there
underrated massive
yeah.
influence. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we solved that. That's good. I thought I'd come away from this more troubled than I ended up, but you know, I guess there's nothing wrong with just burning stuff. The grudge, like you said, there's the baseball tie. We'll bring it back. People come back who didn't want to hear about music. Come on back because we're talking about the Cubs burning themselves to the ground. And it could not happen to better ownership, could not happen to a better team in my estimation. So I hope that the so-called rebuild, which the term they don't want to use, I don't know what they're going to use, just desolation, just desert, whatever it is, looking up at the White Sox for years to come, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good. It's not going to be pleasant for them, I don't think. And
no,
because they don't have much.
They don't.
I mean, I know they have enough of a young. I mean, obviously their system's better than the White Sox. White Sox covered the bear, fine. But first of all, it's not saying much. Second of all, you don't know that those guys play. You know, they ascend into. I mean, there is really something to be said for what the White Sox have done this year, and that is graduate so many first rounders and high picks, including Gavin Sheets, into the major leagues and in a way that they're contributing. That's the name of this. It's not to have the most guys on the top 100 list.
And I mean, would you say they're that much better than the White? I mean, it's like, that's kind of why they are where they were when they made those trades, is because none of the guys that were supposed to be those upper echelon.
That's true.
Prospects panned out to anything.
That's true.
And they have a lot of young guys. That's true. But there doesn't seem to be that pipeline there of talent that would give me any confidence in them turning it around and then, you know, even in the next 5 years, really.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us for Believe in the Cubs. We do not. So we are
believe in the Cubs.
We are going to change the name of our program, Tommy. I'm going to make an executive decision here. We're going to change it to Believe in White Sox because I can't really get behind believing in Cubs. Hopefully we will have another, I'm sure we're going to talk about, because we can't really talk about the day-to-day because, you know, it is, hate to say it, but it is in the bag. We'll find some stuff because we ended up going far longer than I thought we would this time around. And we will not wait another month or so to do it again. And I'm sure there'll be stuff to talk about. Some guy coming back, Luis Robert's coming back Monday. Eloy Jimenez definitely re-announced himself with some authority in tonight's game against the Cubs and has so far not, as far as we know, damaged himself in the field. I don't know what the hamstring thing was about. It could have been in the field, but I don't know.
Yeah.
At least he did it. If he did it in the field, it was not getting caught in the net. It was actually making good plays in the field. So
yes,
that's progress, I guess.
Take it.
Now that Andrew Vaughn can like play right field. I mean,
exactly. You know, just put him anywhere.
Gavin Sheets and Center. Okay, well, thanks everybody for listening to what was formerly Believe in Cubs. We do not believe in the Cubs, so Tommy and I are moving over to the South Side. We are going right back to Believe in White Sox. This is number 8. We'll have number 9 sometime in August, maybe a week or so from now. We got some off days coming up. We'll try to fill in with some more content and come up with a more constructive bonus topic than discussing for 20 minutes the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because I don't want time to keep burning stuff down. I mean, I like it. I like seeing the like the punk streak, but you know, come on, we got to build up sometimes.
I can't burn everything. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. You know, so we'll figure it out. I don't know what's going to be, but we'll come up with some bonus category to talk about that you can either tune in for or tune out on. And, you know, we'll do that in a week or so. You want to do that with me, Tommy?
Sounds good.
Let's have it happening. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, especially to the Barbies. We always have to give a special personal thank you to all the Barbies out there, because we know that you're core subscribers to the Believe in White Sox podcast. Please continue.
Hardcore listeners.
Yes. Absolutely. And, you know, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your brothers, call your fathers, call your house pets. Listen to Believe in White Sox. We'll be back in a week or so. Thanks, everybody, for listening.